Nicole Rakowski is on vacation in Iceland. It's the second to last day of her trip, and she and two friends want to get in one last adventure before they fly home. After a 2.5-hour hike, they spot their destination, the Reykjadalur Hot Spring Thermal River. They see other hikers enjoying the warm pools. Excited, they make their way down the hillside and get ready to take a dip.
I got changed into my bathing suit and I took my hiking boots off.
Nicole looks for a spot to step into the steaming water.
But as I stepped down onto, you know, what looked like a hard mud surface, I quickly fell through. I knew right away that just something wasn't right.
A flash of pain shoots up Nicole's legs as she sinks deeper into the muddy riverbank.
My feet were essentially burning, and no matter how hard I tried, I just could not get out.
I'm Tora Couture, and this is Tell Me What Happened, True Stories of People Helping People, an original podcast by OnStar. Every day when you wake up, you don't know if you'll be a person who needs help or if you'll be a person that helps someone else. It's important to remember that it's in all of us to be either one of those things every day. Nicole is a big traveler. She's trekked all across Europe, explored a handful of countries in Africa, and been all over South America. When Nicole goes on a trip, she likes to go outside and find adventure.
Whatever I can do, whether it's swimming somewhere, whether it's going paragliding, you know, I've been skydiving in different areas, so definitely an adrenaline junkie when it comes to these things. But really, it's just touring, seeing natural landscapes that, to me, is huge.
In February 2017, Nicole and two friends went to Iceland. Iceland is known for its rugged landscapes and unspoiled nature. It's home to some of the biggest glaciers in Europe and the most active volcanoes in the world. This volcanic activity means lots of geysers, steam vents, thermal pools, and hot springs.
We decided to drive to somewhere called a hot river, and it was located in this beautiful valley in southern Iceland. The place that we went to literally means steam valley. That's what it translates to into English.
But first, they had to get to it. The hike from the trailhead to the hot spring is about 2.5 miles and over 1,000 feet in elevation gain. But Nicole was in great shape, so she still had plenty of energy to enjoy the scenery.
There was sort of this black, beautiful volcanic stone as we were walking to get to our destination. The colors of the landscape were beyond stunning.
After a leisurely 2.5 hours, they reach the hot spring. Perched on a hilltop, Nicole took in the snow-covered valley.
You see these blue hot pools all around you. You see steam coming into the air. It was truly something out of a fairy tale, to say the least.
Nicole and her friends headed down to the hot spring. They walked along a network of wooden boardwalks on the valley floor.
We're trying to get as many photos as we can. We're chatting about how incredible this is an experience and how lucky we are to truly be here.
They stopped to talk to a group of locals who were already in the water.
They said, you know, if you go a little bit further up the riverbank, it's actually a lot warmer. So that's what we had sort of decided to do. There were certain areas that you could actually see were bubbling, and you see the steam coming out of these geysers. So, you know, sort of common sense, you would know not to touch those.
After a few minutes scoping out the area, Nicole found a spot she liked. She took off her hiking boots and changed into her bathing suit. Then she took a step onto a mud riverbank directly beside the hot spring.
It was slowly starting to sink and make its way up my shins, up to my knees. And I could feel that hot, bubbling, and acidic mud essentially just burning through my skin.
The pain was excruciating.
I remember the feeling of like a million different knives that were just stabbing my feet and lower legs, and my nerve receptors were just on fire. And at that point, I started screaming.
Nicole tried to escape,
I was scraping at the moss, trying to make my way out, but I couldn't. It was almost like, you know, quick mud that you were just sort of, your feet and your legs were completely caught and you couldn't move.
Her friends heard the screams and ran to Nicole as fast as they could. They grabbed her arms and pulled her out.
We looked down at my legs and I just remember thinking, like, they're burnt. The skin was peeled to the side. There was this extreme redness. They started bubbling. And at that point, we knew that things were serious.
Nicole's friends yelled for help.
This was a lot more of a serious situation than we had initially thought. And to make matters a lot worse, nobody could get any cell phone reception, and there was no emergency help nearby.
A few concerned hikers heard their cries and ran over. One person put snow on Nicole's burns to try and help the pain.
But no one had anything to treat second and third degree burns. It was not something that was readily available at hand in a first aid kit.
The people helping Nicole figured out that the only thing they could do was to try and carry Nicole out of the park.
I was essentially a dead weight. This area is very hilly. There's gravel. There is ice. It's slippery. There's also areas where there's mud surfaces, right? So carrying someone on your back proves extremely, extremely tedious.
Not only that, the hikers helping Nicole didn't know the proper technique for carrying someone who couldn't walk.
There was different individuals that tried putting me in the sling, but again, my head sort of kept falling around. My legs were sort of bouncing around. I just remember it being a very strenuous battle to try and get me to some sort of safety.
But there was a man at the hot spring who could deal with this emergency.
We came across an unbelievable stroke of luck when we met Lee, and that's when the entire rescue mission changed, is when we met him.
This is Tell Me What Happened, a podcast created by OnStar to showcase how important a human connection is when you need help, whether you're trapped by a wildfire, fighting off a shark attack, or suffer third-degree burns from a hot spring. Nicole was badly injured. There was no cell reception, so her two friends and a group of concerned hikers tried to carry Nicole to safety.
I would venture to say that was probably the worst day in her life to this day, is my guess. It's a very serious trauma.
That's Lee Rakasa. Like Nicole, Lee loves to travel. He's crossed the globe twice, and his favorite thing to do when he travels is hiking.
I'm the unfortunate hiker who likes to venture into places that I shouldn't go. So Iceland was perfect for getting lost.
Lee is a retired firefighter. He hung up his helmet in 2008 because after 14 years of battling blazes, the job was getting to him.
Sometimes when I would go home after a call, I would still be in that call mentally. I would still think about it. You know, just horrible stuff that happens. You want to get away from that mode.
And Mother Nature helps get Lee out of that mode.
Actually, what I loved about Iceland was its silence. And the only way I can find that is by getting into nature, and I find peace there.
Lee and a few friends hiked to Hot River in search of that peace. When he reached the hot spring, he saw hikers peppered throughout the grasslands and bathing in the steaming water. He hiked down the final hill on the trail, undressed, and slipped in.
It's kind of like a warm blanket when you're inside the water.
Then a noise interrupted the silence.
Just this high-pitched scream that you can hear from way off in the distance.
But Lee didn't get the sense that anything was wrong. And he also wanted some peace and quiet.
I sort of shrunk down in the water and kind of went down river a little bit, thinking, okay, there's people coming close, let me scoot away. And I thought it was just a bunch of kids being noisy, you know, laughing, screaming, having a good time.
Then Lee heard one of his friends say,
"Hey, he's a firefighter." And I kind of looked up, I poked my head like, "What are you talking about?" And then they were talking about me. And I was like, okay, I'm almost naked here.
Lee hesitated, but he wanted to see what was going on. So he toweled off and crossed to the other side of the river. There he saw a group of people carrying a young woman.
So they had her in a backpack style carry, kind of like how you would piggyback with a friend. And my mind was like, why are you carrying her like that? I was like, that doesn't look very comfortable.
Then he saw the look on Nicole's friend's face.
Mortified, like she had just seen death.
Then Lee looked at Nicole. He could tell she was in terrible pain, but he couldn't see where she was injured. The group carrying her made the mistake of putting her clothes on over her burning legs.
Her socks, her pants, everything. Over burns that were actively open, deep down to the muscle, and of course she's gonna be in 10 out of 10 pain. She had third-degree burns, and when you talk about third-degree burns, you talk about loss of sensation at that point because of the charring, the damage of the nerve endings, and the fact that she's in shock.
The wheels in Lee's mind started to turn.
We all knew how to get out of that valley. It was uphill. So therein lies the challenge. How do we get her out of there, up that hill, without her being hurt?
Lee knew he had to take the lead.
My muscle memory kicks in, my triage brain kicks in, and my desire to get that person out of there kicks in. And I remember slinging over my back, I said, let's go.
Lee ended up doing something called a fireman's carry, something that made the carry a lot easier.
A fireman's carry allows someone to carry a person without help by draping them across their shoulders.
Once Lee joined the picture, I knew that there was a sense of hope.
But they weren't out of the woods yet. Not even close. Remember the hot springs were a 2.5 mile hike from the parking lot? The trek out was going to be difficult. But Lee wanted to make sure the situation didn't get even worse.
She was losing a tremendous amount of body heat through the burns, and I personally wanted to know that she wasn't gonna pass out or go into any other state of shock. Then I was just trying to talk to her. I was like, hey, what's your name? What happened?
If Nicole lost too much body heat, she could become hypothermic. If she went into cardiogenic shock, she could have a heart attack. All these possibilities were running through Lee's mind as he walked uphill through gravel, dirt, and ice. After 20 minutes, he passed Nicole to another man in the group. They took turns carrying her.
Every so often, I would shoulder her in the stomach, like, pop, pop, you know, like, hey, wake up, wake up. I was resituating her just to get her to open her eyes and take a deep breath.
Nicole was slipping in and out of consciousness, but she remembers bits and pieces of the rescue.
One of the most vivid moments for me was when I looked at Lee and I just asked, you know, am I going to die? And his response was, not on my watch.
But Lee knew that Nicole's death was still a real possibility.
She can die. This can happen. She can lose blood pressure. She can lose her pulse. Her heart can go into arrest right now. I was like, not okay. You're not going to die here. Not while I'm here. Absolutely not.
And at that point, you know, I had that glimpse of hope that I would still make it alive.
Lee, Nicole's friends, and the group of hikers who first rushed to Nicole's aid walked for almost an hour. Then they came across a young man in uniform on the trail. He was a rescue cadet doing training exercises with his crew.
I was like, you got a freaking radio? Who's that connected to? Like, can you call somebody? He's like, yeah, we have helicopters. I was like, call one. So we were really excited to find this guy.
A helicopter wasn't able to get to them, so they called for an ambulance. This meant that Lee and his group had to march on. Then, about 100 yards from the trailhead, they spot the group of emergency responders.
There had to have been 45 uniformed rescuers there. I was like, we got this young lady from the hot springs. She's in incredible pain. We need to start IVs and start pushing medications right now.
Responders put Nicole in a large basket on the back of an ATV and drove her to the waiting ambulance.
I remember laying in the ambulance and seeing the faces of several paramedics hovering above me. It is extremely, extremely scary. Like, I truly felt like I was experiencing something that was just completely out of my body.
After Nicole was rushed to the hospital, Lee got into his car and went back to his hotel. He repeated two things over and over again in his mind while he drove.
Her name was burned into my brain because I kept saying, Nicole, wake up, Nicole, wake up. You know, and she kept asking me, was she going to die? I just remember those two things, Nicole and am I going to die? And it just played in my mind like a tape.
At the hospital in Reykjavik, a large team of doctors and nurses treated Nicole's wounds.
The physicians and the nurses were speaking in Icelandic, and I was being told information that I couldn't understand. So I think the scariest part to me was I had no idea if I would wake up, and if I did, you know, if my legs would still be attached.
Nicole woke up. Her legs were intact, but she still needed more surgery. Nicole wanted to get back to Canada as soon as possible. So the next day, her medical team in Iceland bandaged her legs, put her in a wheelchair, and got her to the airport. She boarded the plane with a nurse who volunteered to take care of her during the flight and was given an entire row of seats so she could lay down. When Nicole got home, she got skin grafts and spent 2 weeks in the burn unit. It was a slow and painful recovery.
It was a long time of being an outpatient, of being in a wheelchair, of then moving to a walker, then moving to crutches, and then just sort of limping around, not being able to put a lot of pressure on my feet. It was a miracle to be able to walk again, as stated by most medical professionals. But this traumatic event brought both Lee and I together.
Nicole emailed Lee to update him about her recovery. Then she asked him for his address. A few days later, a package arrived at Lee's house.
It came from an organization called the International Star Registry. And I was like, what's this? And then there's a letter there. And it says, a star has been purchased on your behalf and donated to you. And it says, by Nicole Rakowski.
Nicole named the star after Lee.
Which was the coolest thing I've ever heard of, ever. And the name of the star that she selected was Lee, my first name, and then dash A, and then dash hero. And I was like, speechless.
A star is something that, you know, has this fire ignited, and he was a star to me, and continues to be. So I just thought that that elicited a lot of meaning.
When she was well enough, Nicole invited Lee to visit her family in Hamilton, Ontario, about a 60-minute drive from Toronto. When he arrived, Lee gave something special to Nicole.
I handed her my fire helmet.
There was burn marks on the helmet. It was one that was, you know, clearly used and used for the purpose of saving other people's lives, which made it even more meaningful.
People retire and die with those things. You know what I mean? They don't let go of that particular piece of equipment. It's sort of a birthright. You know, when you're a firefighter, you kind of have that to pass down as an heirloom. Well, I don't have kids, you know, and I was like, I want to give her something, you know, to remember me by, to remember what happened. And I gave her my helmet.
That was probably one of the most memorable gifts that I could have ever received.
Lee shared stories about the people he saved and lost while wearing that fire helmet.
Hearing his stories made me realize that, you know, we're all human, but it takes individuals like Lee to stand up and do incredible work on a daily basis. It takes that human connection to make a difference.
Today, Nicole is thriving. She's currently completing a PhD in health management and is the CFO, Chief Fitness Officer, for a fitness startup in Toronto.
I couldn't have done it without Lee. I couldn't have done it without my friends. I couldn't have done it with all these strangers that essentially stepped up to help. I've lived life differently because of this experience. I don't take things for granted.
And Lee? This experience changed the way he sees things too.
As we speak, I'm becoming a paramedic. And a lot of it has to do with wanting to start higher levels of care for people like Nicole who need it. And sometimes it's all the world really needs is somebody willing to make a little bit of a change, to offer just a little bit of help, and you can make a world of difference. Nicole kind of taught me that.
When you think of injuries that might happen while camping or hiking, what comes to mind? Cuts, sprains, broken bones? These are common injuries, and that often means we're prepared for them. But as we learned today, burns can be just as or even more serious. And people tend to be less prepared for them. Todd Schemmelfennig has been an instructor at the National Outdoor Leadership School for over 50 years. More recently, he was the school's wilderness medicine curriculum director and volunteers with ambulance and search and rescue squads. He regularly leads outdoor expeditions and has treated wilderness burn victims. Todd's also spent time in Iceland.
It's an incredibly beautiful place, and I get a chance to lead trips there. Last summer I went, and in addition to doing this hiking hut-to-hut trek on the volcanic trails, my wife and I went up into the West Fjords, and she wanted to see puffins. And we had never seen puffins, and we went out to this little puffin rookery. It was just wonderful.
What's the most common type of burn accident when you're in a remote landscape like that?
Most of what we see when people are camping is the most common burn is to spill hot water. So you get small burns on your feet, on your hands, because when you're cooking, that's where you have the most concentrated form of energy and accidents do happen.
How frequently do you see those kinds of events?
They're common enough that we worry about them all the time. And when you're cooking, when you're camping, when you're in a hut, being cognizant of this hot water, the heat sources, people bumping around, bumping pots, that sort of thing, the safety issues, it's common enough that you have to be aware of it.
What makes administering a burn like that more challenging than at home?
You often have limited supplies. Burn care takes a lot of dressings, especially if the burn is extensive, and we don't carry enough in our first aid kits. So you're going to be limited by your supplies. They can be very painful. They can take a long time to heal. And you also don't quite know often how bad the burn is.
So what are some of the do's and don'ts of treating a burn?
You start out by managing risk, safety, and not having anybody else hurt. So if it's a fire, a hot water situation, you just have to be careful about that. Then ideally, you try to cool the burn. And if a burn isn't an extensive burn, say less than 10% of your body surface area, you want to cool it so you can dissipate that energy as quickly as you can. But again, that takes a lot of water to cool a burn, and you often don't have that available. If it's a big burn that I'm not going to make my patient hypothermic, but I dissipate that energy, I can maybe lessen the extent of the injury and manage the pain and make the patient a little more comfortable. Then I would dress that burn with the cleanest dry dressing I could. I'd pull watches off. I'd try to get rings off. I'd try to get boots off. And that can be difficult because burn skin can be really sensitive. And as you start pulling things off, you can start pulling tissue off. And if that's going on, you just have to stop and dress the burn. And then we ideally try to keep it well-dressed and keep it as clean as possible.
And then how do you dress that burn?
Very loosely wrap it. A burn is going to swell, become swollen after the injury. So I don't want a tight dressing. I want a big, loose dressing over it. And a lot of first aid kits have a 2 or 3 inch wide roller gauze. You just roll that loosely over that burn. But extensive burns, you lose a lot of fluid into, and you expose yourself to what's called cardiovascular shock. Burns also are easily infected, which is the reason we want to dress it very quickly, is to try to manage the risk of infection.
If you don't have gauze and you don't have as well supplied a first aid kit, is any kind of clean clothing kind of dressing good enough?
You put the best dressing you have on there.
Okay.
People also will put on saran wrap, plastic food wrap around burns as well. And improvised, not ideal, but not necessarily harmful.
Now, of course, the best way to treat burns is to prevent them from happening in the first place. What are your tips to avoid accidental burns when you are in the wilderness?
With the common burns, most common burn being a sunburn, wear clothing, wear a hat, wear sunscreen. With the common burn of the spilled hot water, just be careful around where you're cooking, have a disciplined, well set up cooking area. Make everybody cognizant of that. Campfires. I've actually seen somebody trip and fall into a campfire. Any kind of heat source, energy, hot water, flame. It's just a question of being careful.
That's it for this episode of OnStar's Tell Me What Happened. True stories of people helping people. If you want to share your own story about a stranger who showed up for you at just the right moment, look for a link at OnStar.com. Or if you're listening on Spotify, check out the Q&A feature. Let's share some love for people who help others in big ways and small. While you're at it, share some love for this podcast. It really helps if you review and rate us or share this with someone who would enjoy it. On behalf of OnStar, I'm Tora Couture. Please, be safe out there.